who said that he was going to flatten Gaza, who's issued orders to kill more than 40,000, upwards of 190,000 Palestinians. We still don't know the numbers. Who has made life in Gaza unlivable, who's using Palestinians as human pinballs, telling them to move from one area to the next, who's presiding over a genocide, and unabashedly so. It's going to be shocking to see the number of applause and rounds of applause and the standing ovations that this man is going to be receiving. It very much signals exactly where the United States is, which is complicit in this genocide. And Palestinians know this. If anything, that he should have not had received an invitation. He should simply be getting a warrant for his arrest, not be receiving applause and accolades in Congress.
Diana Bhutu, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Palestinian human rights attorney joining us from Brussels, Belgium. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a director of development to lead our fundraising team. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dean Augusta, Shroof of Dokadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astugio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, and Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, July 29th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an organization is providing support for migrant workers' families during the peak harvest season in Oregon.
The Sauvie Island fire is under control, but fires in eastern Oregon cause evacuation orders.
And in national news, President Joe Biden drops his 2024 re-election bid, endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 22nd, 2024. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Reed Johnson. A fire started this past Saturday on Sauvie Island due to a fallen power line. Other fires rage in eastern Oregon, resulting in evacuation orders. Grant Button has more on the story.
A fire broke out on Sauvie Island last Saturday afternoon. A representative of the Sauvie Island Fire District said that the fire started around 4 p.m. after a fallen power line ignited nearby grass and blackberry bushes on Northwest Reeder Road. The afternoon wind gusts caused the fire to spread quickly as it jumped over the road and ignited the woods across the way, covering around 2 acres. The first firefighters that arrived at the scene immediately called for additional resources. Officials said it took over an hour to contain the fast-moving fire and 9 more hours to completely control it. Portland General Electric helped remove 4 trees that could have fueled the fire, while the Scappoose Fire District and the Portland Fire and Rescue Teams helped to contain it. There were no reported injuries or damaged structures. In addition to the Sauvie Island fire, firefighters are currently battling the Durkee and Cow Valley fires south of Baker City, which have spread to cover over 300,000 acres combined. Though the Cow Valley fire was roughly 80% contained as of this morning, the Durkee fire remains uncontrolled. This has led to Level 3 evacuation orders in the Huntington and Rye Valley areas, and the temporary closure of I-84 between Baker City and Ontario. Today, the Baker City Sheriff's Office released a statement regarding the evacuation order. They said, quote, "With thunderstorms forecasted late this afternoon, the potential for high winds and unpredictable fire weather, we anticipate the evacuation levels will remain unchanged throughout the day," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Bunn.
The resources available for Migrant Access to Services, Oregon Ramas Group, makes food boxes and other services available to families during peak harvest in the Columbia River Gorge. Eric Tegedoff has more.
A program in the Columbia River Gorge helps migrant farm workers' families during harvest season. The resources available for Migrant Access to Services, or RAMAS Group, is led by the Oregon Child Development Coalition in Hood River and Wasco counties. It provides support during a four-week period of peak harvest time, including food boxes to families. Leah Hall with Columbia Gorge Food Bank in the Dalles says migrant workers follow the harvest and often bring their families with them.
We provide culturally appropriate and shelf-stable food boxes to distribute to families when they arrive during this transitional time. And these direct distributions just allow for an efficient use of time and resources for families while also reducing some of the pressure on our public pantry partners throughout the region.
Harvest season in the Columbia River Gorge typically happens between June and October, with cherries in season during July. Hall says the group provides more than food boxes.
Through the coordination of all these partners that work in this RAMAS collaborative, the community of migrant farm workers and families receive education, nutrition, health, social services, mental health and disabilities, and family engagement education services.
Coordination from RAMAS is key for another reason. Hall says the group works with orchardists and farm owners in the region to determine when workers are expected to arrive.
We're able to pack our boxes on our end as close to the harvest date as possible and get it in the hands of those who need it as they're arriving. So the timing is really quite amazing and efficient just based on the communication of everyone working in this program.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris for president in a statement released this morning. Kotek's statement follows President Biden's announcement Sunday afternoon that he will step down from the presidential election in November. Vice President Harris announced her intention to run for president Sunday afternoon. Harris was swiftly endorsed by President Biden and other top Democrats. In Oregon, Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley have both voiced their support for Harris, as have Representatives Val Hoyle, Andrea Salinas, and Suzanne Bonamici.
Mitigating age-related hearing loss through the use of hearing aids can preserve cognitive health and reduce the risks of loneliness, isolation, anxiety, depression, and dementia, according to a new report by the Global Council on Brain Health. Eric Galatis has more on the story.
Correcting hearing loss by using hearing aids is a simple and effective way to reduce your risk for cognitive decline and dementia as you age, according to a new Global Council on Brain Health report. Sarah Locke with the council says the report should be a wake-up call for everyone, especially older Americans. She urges people to not let the stigma sometimes associated with hearing loss get in the way of prioritizing hearing health.
Hearing promotes emotional well-being, mental well-being, and your cognitive health. It's just too important not to take care of it. And when you can do something as simple as get a hearing aid to correct hearing loss, why wouldn't you want to do that?
Researchers say if left untreated, hearing loss also increases risks associated with social isolation, loneliness, anxiety, and depression. Locke says the report underscores warnings by the U.S. Surgeon General that the nation is experiencing a loneliness and social isolation epidemic, with health impacts equal to smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day. Age-related hearing decline is not curable, but it can be treated with hearing aids that achieve the crucial goal of helping people hear better. While hearing loss is often associated with aging, Locke says it's important for people of all ages to protect their hearing.
pop those little foam plugs in your ears so that you're not having your ears assaulted at work or at noisy concerts. So there's simple things that you can do to protect your hearing no matter what age you are.
An AARP survey found that nearly 6 in 10 Americans age 50 and older have not had a hearing test in the past 5 years as recommended, and only 38% said their hearing was excellent. But Locke points out nearly 8 in 10 say they would address hearing loss if they knew it could impact brain health.
AARP offers free screening for our members. If you go to aarp.org/hearing, you can find the Hearing Center and you can take a free hearing test over the phone.
This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
Funds from the Great American Outdoors Act are again coming to the Northwest to improve recreation opportunities on the region's forests. 23 projects in Oregon and Washington will receive $27 million in funding. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
More than $27 million is coming to upgrade forests in the Northwest for recreation. The investment is the latest round of funding from the Great American Outdoors Act, which was passed in 2020 and established the National Parks and Public Land Legacy Restoration Fund. The legislation is aimed to address the backlog of maintenance needed on public lands. Tracy Calazon with the U.S. Forest Service Pacific Northwest Region says 23 projects across national forests in Oregon and Washington were chosen.
That is for fixing campgrounds, replacing toilets, updating trailheads, signage, kiosks, roads, providing access and accessibility improvements, really at the sites that the public knows and loves across National Forest of the Pacific Northwest.
There are now 76 Legacy Restoration Fund projects in the Northwest, with 18 of them completed. The U.S. Forest Service says the Great American Outdoors Act has brought $77 million in contracts to Oregon and Washington to complete these projects. Calazon says there are many elements to maintaining the country's forests.
It's not necessarily only the trailheads or the public-facing infrastructure. It's also the infrastructure to support the whole picture and make sure that we have the staff to be able to provide these great opportunities.
The Great American Outdoors Act is working to address the country's $8.6 billion deferred maintenance backlog on public lands. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians is one step closer to regaining ownership of a 187-acre chunk of land on the Leelanau Peninsula. The land was illegally transferred to private ownership in 1855, but with a new grant, that could change. With the story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians is one step closer to regaining ownership of a 187-acre chunk of land on the Leelanau Peninsula. Interlochen Public Radio environment reporter Ellie Katz has more.
The site on Grand Traverse Bay between Omena and Northport was once home to the Timber Shores Campground. It was later eyed for luxury condos with a private marina. And most recently, a group wanted to turn it into an RV park and campground. But before any of that, it was ancestral land of the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians that had been illegally transferred to private ownership in 1855. But with new money from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that could change. A local nonprofit called New Community Vision will use the grant money and their own fundraising to purchase the land, then transfer it to the tribe's ownership. Under the agreement, the site will be renamed Mashkeag Aki, which means marshlands and place of the medicine. The tribe plans to restore the shoreline, wetlands, and creek corridor, which are important spawning grounds for cisco and other native fish species. The plan is for it to remain a protected nature preserve with public access in perpetuity. For National Native News, I'm Ellie Katz.
The 2024 Arctic Thunder Open House took place this weekend at the Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage, Alaska. The open house featured various demonstrations along with a crowd favorite, the U.S. Army Golden Knights parachute team. Karen Rutka is a colonel in the United States Army. She says not just anyone could become a Golden Knight and that it takes many hours of experience and dedication.
There's a very rigorous selection process. You're probably going to come in where you're already skydiver certified. You need to have probably a couple hundred jumps. And then after that, then you go through a very rigorous selection process that's several weeks long. And then after you get selected for the team, you have about a year-long training timeline before you're fully a true Golden Knights member, and then you actually get to perform with the rest of the team.
Although the team has done thousands of shows through the years and throughout the country, practice and rehearsals can never be skipped.
Today we're going up to 12,500 feet. It's going to be hot, dry, hot, hot, hot. First hot will be the narrator, Brandon.
By mid-afternoon, the plane was boarded and everyone was strapped in for the 12,500-foot ascent, prepared for the first jump of the weekend. One would think the soldiers would be focused, stoic, and silent, waiting for their anticipated dives.
Go get it. The choir's going. Oh, yes!
Feel it, Mikey. Feel it!
After about 30 minutes in the air, one of the men gave the signal that it was go time. As they got to the opening of the plane, they did one last check-in before they heard the magic words. One by one, the team jumped, some with signature poses as they fell 12,000 plus miles to a waiting audience down below. Attached to their ankle was different colored powder canisters to activate midair that would make them more visible. The men created formations, aerial acrobatics, and before touching ground, pulled out different flags representing the state and country. After all was said and done, the team gathered their parachutes and made their way to one of the U.S. Army bunkers to roll them back up and prepare for the last show Sunday. I'm Jill Freitas.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on how communities support gender-diverse children in conservative states with anti-trans laws. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather is clear with a low of 61. Tomorrow's weather is sunny with a high of 80. Today in history, American aviator Wiley Post became the first pilot to fly solo around the world in 1933. It took him 7 days and 18 hours to accomplish this feat. Post was known for his work in high-altitude flying. He helped to develop one of the first pressurized suits and discover the jet stream. The quote of the day is from T.S. Eliot, poet, essayist, and playwright. He's widely considered to be one of the 20th century's greatest poets, as well as a central figure in English modernist poetry. Eliot said, quote, "Television is a medium of entertainment which permits millions of people to listen to the same joke at the same time and yet remain lonesome."
President Joe Biden drops his 2024 re-election bid. He's endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris to take his spot on the ticket, and election experts say they see benefits to this decision. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
A new Democratic nominee could generate a relief rally, not only among Democrats, but perhaps among independents and some alienated Republicans, that there is a different choice than Biden or Trump.
SMU political science professor Cal Jillison says President Joe Biden ending his re-election bid could reinvigorate some discouraged voters. Biden's decision answers calls to step aside many from Democrats in Congress after a poor debate performance last month. But Biden also says it's best for the party and the country if he stays in office until the new president is inaugurated in January. Biden is endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris to take his spot on the ticket. Harris responded by saying she'll work and earn the nomination. The mechanics of a changeover might get messy. No nominee is formally selected until the Democratic Convention delegates vote and other candidates could push for a contested process. Biden would probably release the delegates' pledge to him, urging them to choose Harris, but Republicans say they intend to sue, arguing that ignores the millions of votes cast during the primaries. Harris has already been campaigning hard. At a recent event in North Carolina, she said Republicans are making empty claims of being the party of unity.
You cannot claim you stand for unity if you are pushing an agenda that deprives whole groups of Americans of basic freedoms, opportunity, and dignity.
Along with ardent speeches on reproductive rights, she has pleased the Democratic faithful by pushing back on former President Donald Trump's rhetoric, as in a recent Philadelphia speech.
Donald Trump openly vowed, if reelected, that he will be a dictator on day one, that he will weaponize the Department of Justice against his political enemies, that he will round up peaceful protesters and throw them out of our country.
University of California sociology professor Nina Elisoff says Biden's announcement shows small-d democracy in action inside the Democratic Party.
I think if there was a shift, it would actually be really healthy for democracy, because it would show that Democrats at least really care about the truth, about what the person who's supposed to be leading the country is like.
University of New Mexico law professor Josh Kastenberg says Harris would likely face an onslaught of racist and sexist comments.
If you think about 2016 and the amount of misogynistic content directed against Hillary Clinton, you're going to see that even more so now in regard to Harris. Anti-feminism, misogyny, racism.
Trump says Harris will be easier to beat than Biden, although some experts like UCLA political science professor Lynn Vavrick feel differently.
The race will once again tighten to be somewhere around 50-50. That will roll us into the Democratic convention, and from that point forward, it's not that long until early voting starts.
New York Times polling says the race is still close, and while Harris trails Trump in some places, she may be closing or overtaking him in others. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
For those emerging from weekend rock abodes, President Joe Biden has dropped out of the 2024 presidential race, meaning he's soon to end his 50-year political career. A sociology professor from the University of Southern California contends the decision means democracy is alive. Alex Gonzalez has more on the story.
Over the weekend, while self-isolating and recovering from COVID, President Joe Biden announced he's stepping down as the Democratic candidate in the 2024 election. Biden has also officially endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris as the nominee. While the announcement comes amid a tumultuous race, sociology professor Nina Elisoff at the University of Southern California says it shows democracy is alive.
It would have been healthier to have done it earlier, but I think if there was a shift, it would actually be really healthy for democracy, because it would show that Democrats at least really care about the truth, about what the person who's supposed to be leading the country is like.
Elisoff says Biden struggled to sell the public on his ability to do the job and his policy wins, which she says eroded confidence in the party and among voters. Biden will finish out his term, which has sparked criticism from Republicans who say if he's unfit for re-election, he should resign now. In a statement, Harris says she'll work to unite the Democratic Party and the nation, even as some Democrats call for an open nomination process. Biden's decision to drop out of the race comes as many congressional Democrats publicly called for him to step aside following his shaky performance in last month's debate against former President Donald Trump. Elisoff says the president likely faced more pressure.
It's really risky for them, not personally necessarily, but for the party, because if they say he should resign and he doesn't, it looks terrible. You can bet on it that for every Democrat that's saying publicly he should resign, there's a lot who are saying privately that he should resign.
Elisoff says her advice to voters would be to show their support for a party this election cycle rather than the presidential candidate.
They assemble staffs that put out the legislation. That's why those lower level, invisible people who parties and legislators pick are really the main characters.
Many Democrats are thanking Biden for his years of service to the country and hope his decision will give them a better chance at defeating Trump in November. Republicans say the move will likely be met with legal challenges. For United States News Service, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
The chief of the U.S. Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, testified in front of Congress over the failed Trump assassination attempt today. At a campaign event in Pennsylvania on July 13th, 20-year-old Thomas Matthew Crooks fired 8 shots at Mr. Trump from a rooftop. He injured Trump's ear as well as 3 spectators. Within 10 seconds of his first shot, he was killed by a Secret Service sniper. However, questions regarding how someone was able to get within firing range of the former president still remain. Ms. Cheadle testified today in front of Congress in regards to the incident, but many lawmakers found her answers unsatisfactory. She stated many times she was waiting for reports to arrive to give her the requested information 9 days after the event unfolded. These questions included the would-be assassin's access to the warehouse roof, how he brought a firearm to the event, why President Trump was allowed on stage despite warnings about a suspicious person, and other details. Representatives from both parties in Congress have increasingly put pressure on Ms. Cheadle to resign, repeatedly citing concerns over the competency of the agency and her inability to answer questions when testifying.
As the 2024 presidential election nears, more Americans are hearing about the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, and its controversial plan to overhaul the federal government, Project 2025. While most think tanks steer clear of day-to-day politics, the Heritage Foundation was designed for direct political advocacy and could play a major role in a theoretical second Trump administration. Catherine Carley has more on the story.
More Americans are learning about the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, this election season, but its influence has been decades in the making. Its controversial Project 2025 to reshape the federal government includes standard conservative ideas like slashing regulations, along with more extreme plans to restrict abortion and certain contraceptives. Brandeis University Assistant Professor of Politics Zachary Albert says the think tank has played a key role in pushing Republicans toward more conservative policies.
They are policy demanders who have strong opinions about the direction they want government to go. And the research is the first step in pushing for that type of policy change.
Albert says a growing share of think tanks, including the more liberal-leaning Center for American Progress, are engaged in direct political advocacy. The president of the Heritage Foundation has described its role as institutionalizing Trumpism. It's also spending money to influence elections and lobby politicians through its 501c4 advocacy organization, Heritage Action for America. It spent more than $13 million in the 2022 midterms through its super PAC, Sentinel Action Fund. Albert says that's earned Heritage and similar groups the label of do tanks rather than think tanks.
By forming these other 501c4s and even super PACs, these think tanks are allowed to engage in aggressive, direct political advocacy to force their ideas into the political system rather than hoping that they trickle in.
Ideas presented in Project 2025 may already be ingrained. Nearly two-thirds of the authors behind the plan served in former President Donald Trump's administration. Albert says the fact that it's gained such widespread attention ahead of the November election is a telling indication of its expected influence. For New Hampshire News Connection, I'm Catherine Carley. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A 25-year study by the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign finds climate change is hurting certain bird species more than others, which could lead to extinction. Terry D. has more on the story.
A new study by the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign suggests the long-term effects of climate change could create a higher risk of extinction for certain bird species. Between 1980 and 2015, researchers studied more than 400 generalist and specialist bird species across North America. A general species can thrive in various environments. Specialist birds can only live in specific conditions. Madhu Khanna is a professor of environmental economics at the university. She says the data show climate change affects migratory birds and specialist birds at greater rates than the general bird population.
And basically what we found is an increase in the number of days that were hotter than 25 degrees centigrade decreased the population of birds as well as the number of species by about 2% or so.
Khanna says specialist birds lost 7 to 16% of their populations because of climate change. She adds other factors were already impacting birds, including pesticides, land use change, and habitat loss. Researchers compared climate data for the same period alongside the studies. The report found generalist species like the North American sparrow declined by almost 3% during the 25-year study. The threatened spotted owl and red cockaded woodpecker, both specialist species, declined by 5%. Khanna says they studied other variables that might influence birds' ability to adapt to climate change.
Was there any changes that they might be doing in terms of their migratory routes or anything else because of this that might reduce the negative impact of the changing climate? And we actually found no such effect.
Kana believes although birds are currently adapting to their respective environments, she is alarmed about the long-term effects on them if climate change continues. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources has recorded a total of 458 bird species in the state. This is Terry D. for Illinois News Service.
Illinois State Police released body cam footage of a deputy, Sean Grayson, shooting Sonia Massey, a 36-year-old black woman, in her home. On July 6th, Grayson and his partner arrived at Massey's home in Springfield, Illinois, after she called police about a possible intruder. The footage shows Grayson asking Massey to remove a pot of boiling water from the stove and retreating when she lifts the pot. Grayson then pulled his gun on Massey and fired three shots as she knelt on her kitchen floor with her hands up. One bullet struck Massey just below her eye and exited through the back of her neck. Massey was taken to a local hospital where she was pronounced dead from her injuries. Many have drawn comparisons between Massey's death and the murder of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis in 2020. Grayson did not have his body cam turned on at the time of the shooting and reportedly attempted to prevent his partner from administering aid. Grayson was arrested and charged with three counts of first-degree murder, one count of aggravated battery with a firearm, and one count of official misconduct. He is being held without bail until his trial begins.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 22nd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Grant Button and Grace Benson. The producer is Grant Button, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Eric Tegadoff, Alex Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, Eric Lattis, Jill Freitas, and Catherine Carley. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. Happy birthday, Althea. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.